to the Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor the Parent Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Welcome to the Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. I'm Lydia El-Khoury.
And I'm Helen Fez.
You've got a bit of a frog in your throat.
Yeah, sorry about that, Lydia.
No worries. Don't worry about it at all. Tonight's show is all about, we're going to be talking about glue ear. Now, everybody knows somebody whose child suffers from glue ear, has it. In fact, 1 in 5 children suffer from glue ear. It's extremely common. But actually, how much do we know about something that is as common as glue ear? We're going to get a few facts about it. We had hoped to have somebody from Great Ormond Street Hospital talking to us, and we've tried Watford General, we've tried loads of hospitals to get somebody on, but it's summertime and I don't think there's a single English doctor in the country, so don't get sick. They've all left the country, and we're going to just give you a little rundown of it ourselves about what glue ear is.
And then we're going to be talking to Wendy Westgarth later on about glue ear, and she's a family officer at the National Deaf Children's Society. So we're going to be talking about the effect of glue ear on families and the support that NDCS provides to children with glue ear.
Yeah, and to round up the show, Helen and myself will be talking about people's personal experience of glue ear and how they dealt with it. So stay tuned. There's lots going on in the show tonight, and if you have any questions, call us on 01727 839 9226 or email us on parentsshow@radioverulam.com. If you would like to share your own personal experience of glue ear, we'd love to hear from you, and we'd really value your contribution. So give us a call, 01727 839 9226, and we'll have you live on air telling us about what glue ear, how it affected your family. So stay tuned.
Your station in your community. Radio Verulam in West Hearts.
Radio Verulam Community Partners.
St Albans District Neighbourhood Watch is an organisation run by the community in the interests of reducing crime and hooliganism throughout the district. It works in close partnership with the local police and members of the council. It has been shown that crime is greatly reduced in recognised neighbourhood watch areas. If you wish to become a member, which costs you nothing, ring the watch liaison officer on 01727 796 087.
For more on Radio Verulam Community Partners, go to radioverulam.com/community partners.
Welcome back to the Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. Now, as we promised before the song, tonight's show is all about glue ear and the effect it has on our children. Now, everybody knows 1 in 5 children have glue ear, so it's not uncommon. But what exactly is it? Actually, the condition, it is a childhood condition, and the reason why I'm explaining it to you is because we were supposed to have somebody from Great Ormond Street on who unfortunately couldn't make it, and several other consultants that we tried to approach are all on summer holiday. So I'll just give you a rundown of what the basics of glue ear are. It's a common childhood condition, and it's when the middle ear becomes filled with fluid, and its medical term is otitis media with effusion. So there you go, in case you want to know what you've got to tell your doctor. So the main symptom of glue ear is some hearing loss in one or both ears, and this usually feels similar to what you experience when you put your fingers in your ears. And signs that your child may be having problems include struggling to keep up with conversations, becoming aggravated because they are trying to hear harder, regularly turning up the volume on the TV. But you should, glue ear should be treated, and glue ear, most cases are not treated, and it will go away by itself. And it says usually within 3 months. And I don't know. I don't know if that was your experience, Helen.
No, it was a couple of years actually with my son that he had kind of recurrent ear infections. And when that goes on for a long time, they then start talking about grommets. So I think that's the longer term treatment for it, is to actually let the kind of fluid come out of the ear, and that's an operation under general anaesthetic, so I wasn't too keen on doing that.
Yeah, that sounds pretty serious. It doesn't sound like the kind of first solution you'd want to take for
having said that, I've heard though that the long term effects of not doing that are quite serious, because it can then affect their speaking, their speech, and it can also affect walking, so the balance. So by not doing it could actually be worse than actually treating it.
So, there's a balance there.
So, I mean, I think when children have problems with their ears, it seems like a fairly minor thing. But if you think of the long-term effects, it can be fairly serious. If you let it go untreated, then I think it can have far-reaching consequences in terms of them not being able to speak as well as their friends, and then that affects them at school. And
it must affect their confidence then as well, obviously, if they can't.
So I think the short term, it's kind of fairly painful. And I know with our little boy, we had to give him a lot of Calpol at night, and that's what, I think it's worse at night. But long term, it can be worse. So he was just basically on antibiotics for a long time. To try and get rid of the ear infections.
Yeah, that is tough. That is tough, especially for something that, you know, everybody kind of, I mean, so many people, you know, have glue ear, but it shouldn't be underestimated. Now, I'm just reading up about the causes of glue ear, and it says the middle ear is directly behind the eardrum, and it's made up of three tiny layers, lever-like bones that carry out sound vibrations from the eardrum to the inner ear. And with glue ear, the buildup of fluid prevents the tiny little bones in the ear from moving freely, which means that they can't pass sound vibrations to the inner ear, and that's what affects the hearing. Mm-hmm. And they don't understand, it's unclear what exactly causes the buildup of fluid, and more than half of cases develop after a previous ear infection.
I think that's what it is. I think that's how they diagnose it, is if you've had a lot of ear infections within the short time period, then often it is because of glue ear. So I think that's the first thing they notice, because when you have an ear infection, you get lots of fluids coming out of the ear, and it can be very painful. And a one-off thing is fairly common, but I suppose if it happens again and again, that points to a more serious problem with the ear. But somebody told me it was really basically because they're just very narrow, and so... I'm not sure what you call them, the little kind of tunnels or whatever. Yeah, that's not a medical term. But because with children, it's all so tiny, and that's why you get a build-up. So that's why it's so common.
Gosh.
And as they get older, I suppose, they grow. And so
the passageway into the ear, eardrum gets bigger. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense as well. But one interesting thing the NHS say about it is glue ear is not caused by getting water in the ear after swimming and showering or due to a buildup of earwax.
So, okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I'd say it's very often confused for those very things. You know, I mean, you know, if your child is very slightly hard of hearing, it must be very hard to decipher whether it's just kind of water in the ear or a build-up of wax, or if it is in fact something that you need to go to your doctor about.
Exactly, because some children don't respond to you anyway, do they? I mean, my little boy ignores me most of the time. If I say, ask him to do something, he's too busy playing. I don't know whether he has actually got a problem still with his ear, because he had another ear infection recently, or whether he's just so engrossed in his playing that he's just not responding.
That's exactly it.
And it is a tricky one.
My son has had various hearing tests for because of post-meningitis, and he... When he went for one of the hearing tests, I was saying, I am a bit concerned this time. He'd passed them all, no problem. I said, I am a bit concerned because he really doesn't react when I'm calling him. And she went through, did all the tests with him. And she said, his hearing is perfect. I think it's selective. I was like, great, thanks very much. So my son's ignoring me, but he's got perfect hearing. But yeah, I think it's probably something that you're going to go through with 3 and 4 year olds where they just zone you out.
It's the same with the talking as well and the walking, because my little boy was so behind all his friends, and I wasn't sure if that was because of the ear problems or whether it could have just happened anyway like that, couldn't it? That he was a bum shuffler, so walked late anyway.
Yeah.
But you do get concerned if all his friends, you know, are talking really well and he's not saying not really saying the words that all his friends are saying as early.
Absolutely.
But now he's caught up and he's, you know, he's 3 and a half now, and I think he's probably as good as all his friends. As long as you treat it early, I think they can soon catch up with their friends and get back to normal.
And I'd say that the issue you'd have with it is you think, God, do I really want to take this to the GP stage, or am I going to almost stigmatise him by kind of formalising a condition when it might be something nothing unusual and neurotic as a mother?
But I don't worry about that, do you? I mean, I just go to the GP all the time. I think that's what they're there for. if I have any concerns, straight to the GP.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they don't mind. I think with children it's very important, isn't it, just to kind of get them checked out.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you wouldn't go at the same rate for yourself as you do for your kids.
No.
It's incomparable, you know.
Yeah.
But that's what they're there for. Although I think at this moment in time. I don't think there's a huge amount of GPs working. I think
they're all on the beach.
They're all on the beach. They're all on holiday by the sounds of it, but the ones that we've tried to get. Well, okie doke. So we've given you, for those of you who don't know, just a very, very brief and superficial overview of what Glue Ear is. But for a more in-depth analysis of Glue Ear, we'll be talking to Wendy Westgarth, who's a family officer of the National Deaf Children's Society, and she's going to talk to us about the effect of Glue Ear on families and what kind of support the NDCS provides to children who have Glue Ear. So we have a bit of music, and here's Cast with All Right. Welcome back to The Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. Now, as we promised, tonight we're talking all about Glue Ear, and Wendy Westgarth, who's the family officer of the National Deaf Children's Society, on the phone to talk to us this evening. Hi Wendy, how are you?
Hello Lydia, I'm not too bad, thank you, although interestingly enough I myself have recently had an ear infection.
Have you really? Oh, no. you think you'd be exempt with the job you do?
You're right, yes, but I totally agree with Helen. It can be extremely painful, especially at night time. So I think she did exactly the right thing going to her doctor for her son to ask for help with this.
Great stuff. So, Wendy, we were trying to give a kind of a synopsis of what Glue Ear is, you know, from what we've cobbled together, because unfortunately we couldn't get a consultant on. But can you tell us a little bit about your experience of Glue Ear at the NDCS?
Glue Ear can actually be quite common for children. For ears to work properly, the middle ear needs to be kept full of air, and that air needs to travel through the eustachian tube, which is a tiny narrow tube. And if that air doesn't flow freely, then that's when you can get a problem. If it becomes blocked, air can't sort of flow freely through the ear. So that's when you start to get your problem with ear infections, which if they don't heal up, as Helen said quite rightly, then it can start to get more sticky type of fluid, which then becomes more blocked and quite painful and results in glue ear. Now at NDCS, National Deaf Children's Society, we're a charity that's dedicated to children and their families who suffer from hearing loss. And we do actually have an audiologist at National Deaf Children's Society who can offer more medical advice on glue ear and the treatments and so on. And we do also provide impartial information in the form of booklets about glue ear.
Sorry, Wendy, hi. So once the child's been diagnosed with glue ear, is there anything the parents can actually do for that child just to ease the symptoms?
I think one of the main things for parents, and this is quite difficult because with glue ear, children present with symptoms, for example, as if they're completely ignoring you, they're not listening to you. And again, mm-hmm. the knock-on effect with that can occur in schools where it looks like they're not paying attention. So one of the most important things to do is to keep those lines of communication open, make sure that you are looking at your child when you are speaking to them, face them, speak clearly. Don't assume that if you call from another room, they're going to hear you.
Okay,
I know from experience, a child I had with glue ear, I was doing some tests on, and the mother actually said to me that the radio was blaring out in the kitchen. And she said to her child, "Will you turn that radio down? It's absolutely blaring." And the child actually said, "Don't skip me, ma'am, it's not even on."
Oh, really?
So that shows you how bad it can be, you know?
Yeah.
But at National Deaf Children's Society, we have a team of family officers, of which I am one. We have a network of them throughout the UK. And we also offer advice and support to families about things like glue ear, for example, or other medical conditions associated with hearing loss, or things like welfare benefits and education and so on. And we offer this impartial information in the form of leaflets about glue ear. So some of the questions you're asking, you know, what can I do to help? We have a whole list of things about the treatments and what types of things can help a child.
Okay.
And
that sounds really useful, because I've actually got a friend who's got a child with glue ear at the moment, and she's concerned that she's constantly giving the child Calpol every night because he's in so much pain from it and he's so miserable, and she's feeling guilty because she's having to give him so much Calpol. But would you say that was the right thing to do?
I would say if the pain gets so bad, the best thing you can do is go to the doctor.
I think
go
she has, yeah. Well, she has taken them, yeah, and they've said it's, you know, and I don't think there's anything they can do because it's not an actual ear infection that he's got, so it's basically glue ear that he's got.
I think if she's still got concerns, there's no harm in going back to the doctor again and asking about whether it might be appropriate to make a referral to somebody called an ENT consultant, an ear, nose and throat consultant, because they then could do a more detailed examination of the ears and then work out whether it's something more than just an ear infection.
Right.
I know you are quite right, because you referred to, oh, sometimes they can just heal by themselves, and that's true. Sometimes you need to, like I did, go on to antibiotics. Then if that doesn't work, it could be more antibiotics or ear drops. But ultimately, if it gets too painful, go back to the doctors, or even go to, say, accident and emergency if you're really, really worried if the child looks terribly ill. Or another option for you is to ring our free phone helpline and ask to speak to NDCS's audiologist, and they can give you some suggestions as well.
Okay. Thanks. It is quite tricky, though, isn't it? Because I think her little boy is 1.5, and there's so many other things that could be wrong, you know, at that age, and they can't really tell you, can they, when what's hurting? You know, it could be teething, or it could be something else. Are they actually aware that that's, you know, that's where the pain's coming from? I mean, what age can they actually tell you my ears are hurting?
Yeah, I think with that, you would need to, yes, you know your child best, you're the experts, see how they react in everyday life. So do they appear to ignore you? Do they not respond to loud noises? Do they put the TV on full blast? Do they walk right up to the TV and sit right in front of it, which would be most unusual for a lot of children.
Okay,
they wouldn't need to sit that close.
Yeah.
They're your clues.
So it's quite obvious then, really, if it's a problem.
And is, Wendy, is it is a common ailment, but can it ever, can glue ever become, glue ear ever become serious?
I think in terms of the pain, it can get quite bad, but it is treatable. It's a common childhood illness. Children under 5 are the largest group that's affected, although it could, of course, persist into adolescence. But it's just widely accepted that it can cause the temporary deafness, perhaps delayed speech development in young children, and their behaviour might be affected if it's not treated effectively. But provided parents consult specialists and monitor it, and make sure that they don't suffer too much, then, you know, there are simple steps that parents can follow at home to, you know, keep, make sure that they stay well. So it is essentially talk to your doctor. As long as you get that treatment, whatever that might need to be it the antibiotics or perhaps grommets, yes, it's okay. They will be all right. They won't suffer.
Is grommets a last resort, Wendy?
I think that would be something best, you know, you speak to National Deaf Children's Society's audiologist, because it's quite a medical condition, and I think it would be better to ask those sorts of questions to them or to your own doctor. Grommets are, yes, they are used, and if they do not work, grommets can be used again to a certain amount of times, but each time you do a grommet operation and you insert a grommet, then you are in effect scarring the eardrum in effect. So, you know, you have to tread carefully with this. And yes, you can do it so many times, but again, I would be inclined to listen to what your specialist says as to what the most appropriate form of treatment's going to be.
It's a tricky one, because with my little boy, he was given the option to have grommets because he was having, you know, ear infections for a couple of years. But the ENT consultant did kind of say it was the parent's choice to decide whether to have them or not. And so I didn't really know what to do. So luckily, at that point, it started getting better anyway. So we're glad we didn't do anything.
Yeah.
But it's difficult to know, isn't it?
It is. It's like anything in life. It's always difficult to make that decision. That's why, as I say, if you have a look at National Deaf Children's Society glue ear leaflet, it does take you through the different types of treatment you can consider. And that's in the hope that then, by having all the necessary information, you yourself can then make that informed choice. Okay, I've read about grommets, I've read about other treatments, I've read about antibiotics, I've read about leaving it be. What do I think I'm going to do? And then you can make that informed choice on what you think is most appropriate for your child.
Okay, yeah. That seems to be quite common nowadays, doesn't it, for the parents to have the choice rather than being told what to do. And that's all sort of situation. Another question, Wendy. Because glue ear generally affects children for a relatively short period of time, is there any point in parents learning to deal with a child who has hearing difficulties?
Like sign language or lip reading or anything?
You're right. It's important it's identified as soon as possible and that parents and teachers know how it can affect the learning. I think before even looking at sign language, the very basic communication tips can help to make listening easier. So, for example, I think I touched on this before, make sure you're facing the child as much as possible. Keep eye contact with them, get down to their level, because by doing that, the child then has a chance of being able to lip read. And it's surprising how much we, all of us in life, lip read, especially in noisy situations. That can aid a child's understanding. Yes, use gesture. If you happen to know some signs, that's great. But I think if you just get down to their level and face them and speak clearly, don't shout, because that would distort your voice patterns. And also keep that background noise level down, and then that gives the child every possible chance of being able to hear and understand what you're saying.
So can you describe an ideal environment? Obviously you can't wrap your child in cotton wool the whole time, but if you're going to have conversations with your kid, what's the best room, the best environment to have it in? So a room with no music, no background, no television, nothing on the background, ideally face to face. Is that the
yes small rooms are ideal, rather than big high ceilings and echoes. I know these days lots of houses have the hard flooring, which of course acoustically can make the sound bounce off the walls. So carpeted is ideal, but really it's the quiet side of things. So it's things like I said, television off, radio off, keep those noise levels down, and just give them quality time.
And what would you do in regards to friends, and would you encourage your child just to have one-to-one play dates to kind of tailor it more to your child's needs, or is that going too far?
I think you've got to be sensible about this. I think you do have to let other friends and family know what the situation is, because otherwise they're going to not communicate in the appropriate way. And I think it's important just to say, for example, little Johnny can't hear very well. You're going to have to make sure that you face him. If he ignores you or if he doesn't respond to you, make sure you tell him again what you want to do. I think one of the worst things you can do is say, oh, it doesn't matter, because that frustrates the child then. Well, what was it you wanted me to do? Or it might have been a joke somebody's made and they've missed it through not hearing it. And that can be so frustrating if you can't hear. So make people aware.
Yeah, and it can be so isolating as well. You know yourself, if you feel like you've missed a joke and everybody's laughing and you're just kind of looking on, you know, it's hard. And especially as a young child, it's even more difficult, because you don't have the same maturity of understanding that an adult would.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it's crucial to tell the school, tell the teacher.
That's what I was
going to
ask.
Because if the teacher doesn't know, you know, you absolutely have to say to them, look, he's got an ear infection at the moment. He's not hearing very well. Can you make sure you keep an extra eye on him? Make sure he's near the front. Make sure he's facing you. When you send them away to do something, don't just say, do you know what you're doing? Because they'll probably just nod their head and say yes.
Yeah.
Make sure, say, tell me what you're going to do. You know, how are you going to do it? Just to be sure that they know what they're doing.
Great stuff. That's brilliant.
So, Wendy, are there any kind of long-term effects from having this as a child? Or is it maybe just if you have the grommets fitted, would that maybe have consequences for the future?
I think in terms of if you have grommets, will you have long-term effects? If you don't have grommets, will you have long-term effects?
Yeah, yeah.
Again,
yeah.
I would say important to speak to your doctor or speak to the National Deaf Children's Society audiologist about that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of children grow out of these problems. I know you touched on the point about the ear canals being narrow, and when children are very young, it takes a while before those ear canals reach what we perceive to be the normal size that they should be. So sometimes when they're very narrow, that's when you get the problem with the blockages.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes some syndromes can cause ear canals to be very narrow, for example, Down syndrome. So I think the important thing is, again, talk to your doctor. Are there going to be any long-term effects or not? A lot of children with ear infections do grow out of them and do carry on to lead a perfectly normal life and acquire the speech and language development that they need. But what I would strongly recommend is, if anybody has any questions about glue ear and ear infections, please do ring the National Deaf Children's Society helpline, and that's 0808 800 8880, and our helpline will supply you with the necessary information or signpost you on to our audiologist or one of the family officers like I am, where we can give you further advice and information.
That's fantastic. Wow. Thank you so much, Wendy. I mean, we've had a look at your website today and it's great. I mean, it's so comprehensive and supportive. I'd really strongly recommend any parent have a peek in there before you do a single thing.
So Wendy, just to confirm, is that a kind of direct link to an audiologist then, or do people still have to go to the GP to get referred through?
To go through to the National Deaf Children's Society, no, you don't need to go through the GP. Any parent, after the conversation I've had with you now, can pick up a phone and ring the National Deaf Children's Society. Our helpline hours are 9:30 to 9:30 Monday to Thursday, and then 9:30 to 5 on a Friday. Yes, they can pick up a phone, speak to a helpline person, and then get the necessary information that's needed. Publications can be sent out to them free of charge. It's free to join National Deaf Children's Society, and then you can access our advisors.
So they could speak to an audiologist rather than going through, maybe if they haven't had the right kind of response they wanted from the GP, maybe, or they wanted a kind of direct link to an audiologist.
Absolutely. Yeah. Our audiologist can give them balanced, clear information and informed choice and let them know what their options are.
That sounds great. I wish I'd known about this a few years ago.
That's great.
I think that's a hard thing about parent choice, is you don't really know sometimes, do you? And you're given all this choice, but actually sometimes you just want someone to kind of tell you what to do.
Yeah.
This can be a really difficult decision to make.
Absolutely, yes. And again, this is where family officers come in as well, because we're just there to tell you about the range of options, and then you can then make that informed choice based on the information that you're given.
Okay.
Brilliant. Sounds stuff. Great. Wendy, thanks a million for your help and for your time this evening.
That's a pleasure.
Thanks, Wendy. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye now.
Bye.
Bye.
So that was Wendy Westgarth, the family officer at the National Deaf Children's Society, talking to us about Glue Ear. Now, coming up after the next song, we'll be talking a little bit more to Helen about her experience. And then later on the show, if you want to know what moshy monsters are, do you know what moshy monsters are, Helen?
No, probably not.
It's so funny, and I'd really like to know. So we've got this very innovative and quite young guy working at Radio Verulam at the moment. So he's done a little piece to explain to us parents, lay people.
Us old codgers.
Yeah, we're also old codgers. What exactly moshy monsters are. So tune in later on for that explanation. There you go. Sorry about the beep.
Community Radio in West Hearts. Radio Verulam.
Welcome back to the Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. If you have any shows that you think that we should be covering or subjects that you think we should be doing, is give us a call anytime on 01727 839 926, or drop us an email on parentshow@radioverulam.com. This is, you know, we're just here to present the people who you want to speak to as parents, as listeners. It's led by you, and that's the most valuable thing you can do for us, is tell us what shows you want us to do, and we will go out there and we'll get the best people we can to speak on the subjects that you have concerns or worries about as parents in West Hertfordshire, or indeed in anywhere in the world, because we have listeners in many different parts of the world. So Helen, back to the glue ear subject. Tell me, how did you figure out there was something wrong with Benji? Like, what was the trigger?
Well, it was a bit embarrassing actually, because he'd just started nursery. He was quite young. He was about 7 months old, and he'd had all this stuff coming out of his ear. And I just thought, being a fairly new parent, I just thought, oh, it's a bit of wax coming out of his ear. And the staff at nursery said, look, you really got to do something, because he's got all this stuff coming out of his ear. It's obviously an ear infection. And I didn't realise. I just thought it was wax coming out of his ear.
Yeah, of course.
I just felt like a really bad parent for not realising. So anyway, I took him, because the problem with ear infections is when they're really, really painful, there's no symptoms at all, it seems. And then once it seemed with him, it burst, and then all the stuff comes out. At that point, the pain has gone a bit, because the pressure's not there anymore. But then by that point, it's a bit late, because they've obviously been suffering all that time. There's no symptoms of it, really. And so anyway, that happened. And then he kept having ear infections again and again. And I think after you've had about two or three in a row, the GP will then refer you on to the ENT consultant. Because I think if the antibiotics don't clear it up and if it keeps coming back again and again, then, you know, the GP has to refer you on. And at that point, I think they did start talking about grommets. But luckily, I think after that, I'm not quite sure, because we were very indecisive about what to do. And after that, it did just clear up by itself. Really? So, yeah, it must have been about two. So, yeah, it was painful for him. I think, yeah, as I said, at night it was worse. And just to have constant ear infections, it meant we couldn't, you know, couldn't take him swimming. And I think you can obviously still have baths, but you're not meant to kind of immerse them in water too much. So, yeah, it's a shame, really, for him. It must have been quite painful. But it was the age where they can't really tell you it's painful either.
That's it. And with, like, teething being a constant issue. Like,
yes, exactly.
Especially around that age, around one and a half.
Yes.
Like, sometimes they all just push through in one go. And how would you kind of decipher between the two? I suppose the lesson is, like every lesson, you just, if in doubt, just bring them to the doc, really, isn't it? Just bring them to the GP. And
if there's anything coming out of the ear, then that is a sign. But yeah, even if there's nothing and they're just really miserable, I would say, even if, you know, if the GP just says it's just teething, then at least you know, at least you've had them checked out. And they think they can tell quite easily by looking in the ear whether it's an ear infection still.
Yeah.
And recently, actually, he's had the same problem. And I gave him, he had a course of antibiotics, and then the ear started smelling a bit strange.
Really?
Which I again thought, oh, well, never mind, it's fine.
Yeah.
And then one of my relatives, who's a nurse, said, oh, if there's any strange smells, you should always take them to the GP, because it's obviously an infection. And he said, yes, because all the stuff had come out of his ear, it hadn't cleared properly and it all become infected. So then we had to actually had a perforated eardrum.
Oh, the poor
thing. So then we had to spray this stuff into his ear, which got rid of all the stuff that had built up. And now he's fine again.
Cleared it all out.
Yes. God. Even though the spray said, like, do not use on a perforated eardrum, the GP said, don't worry about that, it's fine.
Oh my God.
So it must have been pretty strong stuff, you know, just to get rid of that.
Yeah, and clear it all up.
But I mean, you know, I think it tends to affect one ear only, so they can still hear with the other ear.
Yeah.
But obviously it's not as good as it would be.
Yeah.
So the poor little thing, yeah, he's had it quite a lot. But now I know what to look out for, but at the time I didn't have a clue.
Yeah, so anybody call in and talk to, ask Helen. She'll give you...
ask me.
You'll give her all the signs for what to look out for.
But it's brilliant that they've got that resource there, because at the time I didn't really know what to do about the grommets, whether to do it or not. Because when you've got a small child, the last thing you want to do is put them under a general anaesthetic, really. But then if it's going to affect their future, then of course you will. It's really, like Wendy was saying, it's just weighing up the different sides, isn't it, of what will happen if you don't do it, what will happen if you do it.
Yeah, exactly. And ask, reach out, say, don't be left stewing on your own. I think that's the most important thing that comes out of it.
Yes, because you do think, oh, there's a GP and that's it, but, you know, there are all these most conditions do have a kind of organisation like this that you can call up and talk to.
Yeah.
You just don't realise it's out there, do you, a lot of the time?
That's it, exactly. Google's a great friend. Now, we better find out what this Moshi Monsters thing is all about. Are you ready, Helen?
I'm ready.
You're ready.
I'm very
to be
excited.
Illuminated. Here we go. Okay.
What's So Cool About is a new series that explains why the younger generation are so hooked on certain topics, like 3D TVs or the Cherub books. My name is Kieran Zielinski, 15 years old, and today I'm here to explain to you what's so cool about Moshi Monsters.
What's so cool about
Moshi Monsters?
Have you been seeing cuddly, odd-looking virtual creatures appearing on your computer screen and hogging the shelves of shops recently? Chances are, you've been witnessing something to do with Moshi Monsters. Moshi Monsters started as an online world where children can adopt a Moshi Monster, caring for it by earning the currency, rocks, in daily puzzles and challenges, but has quickly evolved into an entire range of virtual and non-virtual products, including duvet covers and trading cards. The target market for the site and its merchandise is 7 to 12 year old boys and girls, and has over 60 million users in 150 countries.
What we think!
I'm here on Shepherd's Close with Greg and Orla. Greg, who is aged 10, and Orla, who is aged 9. Both of them have Moshi Monster accounts and various forms of the merchandise. So, for example, DS covers and magazines. Greg, what do you think is it that attracts young people to mushy monsters?
Well, I think because you can talk to friends you haven't seen for a while in like summer holidays and things, so yeah.
So that's on the website. You can sort of talk to them, you can add them, you can see their rooms, they can see yours. You know, they can sort of see your achievements on the site. Is that what... So that's what you're saying?
Yeah.
Orla, what is your favourite part of Mushy Monsters, either on the site or some form of the merchandise?
Well, my favourite is being a member, because if you're not a member, there are lands that you can't go to, but then if you get a membership, you can go to lots of fun lands and have some fun there.
So you're saying that if you're a member, you get sort of more benefits, you can do more than if you're not a member?
No.
So Orla, if one of your friends didn't have a Mushy Monster account, would you recommend them signing up for one?
Yes, I would, because they'll probably find it fun as well.
Yeah, just as you have. And Greg, if that friend, would you recommend to that same friend, that hypothetical friend, to buy a membership?
Well, it depends really, because they can get quite expensive. So I would, but it depends if they have the money.
If it came out of their pocket money, would you recommend them buying it? Is it a good thing to buy a membership?
Yes.
Why is that?
Like Orla said, you can go to different lands and like you can go to the port and get these trees and get money from them and yeah.
So you get a lot more benefits. You can sort of do up your room more, you can get more pets for your Mushy Monster to have in the world. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay then, thank you very much, guys. Hopefully that gives a bit more of an insight into the Mushy Monster world. Why your child wants to play it, what a membership is and its benefits. In fact, what the site is in the first place. Next time on the series, we'll be investigating 3D TVs. I'm Kieran Zielinski, and you've been listening to What's So Cool About Mushy Monsters.
There you go. Now you know all about Mushy Monsters.
I know. Are you illuminated?
Yes.
Fantastic.
You feel even older now.
Yeah, I know. Well, thank you very much to Kieran for providing that little snippet of information for us. We appreciate it.
Now, and thanks for listening on The Parent Show this evening. Thanks for all our contributors to Glue Ear, especially you, Helen Furs. Thank you very much for coming in this evening. It was great to get your take on it. So tune in. We'll be around at the same time next week on The Parent Show, Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. Have a lovely evening.